Greetings, friends. In the second talk in our Inner Freedom series, we looked at the attitude of surrender or yielding that we can bring to the unexpected and uncontrollable circumstances that come our way, that are part of the suchness of life, the richness of life. And in this talk, I want to look at freedom within our emotional landscape. In other words, I want to talk a bit more practically about how we work with our difficult emotions. It can seem so foreign or out of control, dominating, fluctuating, and at times like we're going through the valley of the shadow of death. If you recall back in talk one, we explored how sensory mindfulness and spending time in nature can be ways of dealing with the stuff that goes on in our minds. But sometimes our emotions are so troubled that we can't even see through the fog that sits on us so heavily that we can't really take in what is around us, no matter how beautiful it may be. James Finlay calls this trouble in paradise, and I'm sure you've all had that experience where you can see that what is around you is beautiful, but you can't access it because of this heavy emotional fog that's sitting on you. But in addition to this, we can't always trust our perceptions. You know, if you're hungry, all you notice are delicious food and smells around you. Or if you've ever flown on an overnight flight, you'll know how your eyes are drawn to those very comfortable-looking first-class beds. The motivation selects what you perceive and how you perceive. And if you're deeply distressed or anxious, you can hardly perceive much of the outer world at all. So to find any kind of freedom or a sense of truth, we need to look at this area of our emotions and how do we work with these difficult emotions that come our way. Now, I used to think that the goal of the spiritual life was to feel inner peace all the time. And I used to be a bit confused about the surrender practice that we were talking about in talk two, thinking that it meant that I should conjure up some kind of inner peaceful state, and in the process override or negate the inner tension that I was feeling in the moment. But I've come to realize that the invitation to say yes to the moment as it is, and receive it for what it is the invitation to go all the way down in that surrender. Not just surrendering to the outer circumstances, but also saying yes to the inner emotional texture as well. There's a profound freedom that is possible when this open, non-judgmental receptivity is something that we can bring to the moment. There's a peace that is deeper than an emotional experience of peace. There's more of an abiding sense of peace that is possible when we can bring this kind of complete receptivity to the shape of the moment, whatever its circumstantial or emotional texture may be. And the spiritual teacher Francis Bennett wrote, "Sometimes it takes a severe situation to teach you that true peace, the peace that passes all understanding, is not based at all on any condition being any certain way whatsoever. You learn that the truest peace and happiness is completely unconditional, just as true love is unconditional." And Eckhart Tolle wrote, "Forgive yourself for not being at peace. The moment you completely accept your non-peace becomes transmuted into peace. Anything that you accept fully will get you there, will take you into peace. This is the miracle of surrender." And so we need to begin to honestly acknowledge and open to whatever is going on inside of us emotionally. We've become so used to suppressing and judging our difficult emotional responses, And in the process, we shame ourselves or roughly manhandle our most tender, vulnerable parts. And so freedom within our emotional landscape becomes possible when we start changing these patterns by recognizing and naming whatever is going on inside of us, familiarizing ourselves with it, and allowing room for it without resisting or clinging. And together with this, we need to learn the art of self-compassion. Pema Chodron, who has a strong emphasis on compassion in her teaching, has commented that it's difficult to teach compassion to people from Western countries because we've not learned the art of self-compassion. And self-compassion is necessary to be able to extend true compassion to others, not just a kind of a pretend care. And so just to give a short example of my own experience with self-compassion, on a retreat some years ago, I had come face to face with some of the deepest, darkest fears that had been haunting me my whole life. And I'd realized how much power they've had over me my whole life and how much I've hated them and tried to fight them or suppress them or lock them away where I don't have to face them. And at the time, I was working with a picture of Mary receiving the Christ child that my spiritual director had given me. And I was struck by her attitude of receptivity and surrender. And while working with this image, it struck me that my calling is to receive this person that I am in her entirety, and to nurture her into fullness of life. And it struck me that where I've rejected and scorned my most fragile, vulnerable parts, my wounded parts, the challenge to me is actually to welcome these as I would a calling, an annunciation, a newborn baby, and to tenderly nurture all of these parts into fullness of life. And as I worked with this, I found it an incredibly powerful practice when I felt that familiar paralyzing fear that can literally have me shaking and sweating. I've consciously imagined holding that fear in my arms like a baby, naming it, stroking its head, or touching the part of myself that feels that fear and welcoming it, letting it simply be there. And somehow this has removed the overwhelming power of this fear. And although I've still felt the emotions, they haven't totally swamped me or engulfed me as they used to. I've been able to find a grounding in the midst of this fear and a space in myself that is larger than the emotions that can hold them. And so to talk through the steps of one of the ways that we can work with our emotions is first to let go of the narrative that fuels them, the stories our minds tell about the feelings and their cause are like throwing logs onto a burning fire, continually reinforcing the emotional fires. And then secondly, to try to welcome our emotions, allowing them to be here. You could do this by naming them and bowing to them or feeling them in our bodies physically, their shape, whether they make us feel hot, jagged, shaky, icy, or whatever it may be that we're feeling. I find it really helps to put one's hand there and doing this with kindness and compassion. And it's incredibly powerful to do this as a prayer practice. You could picture allowing yourself, as you hold your own troubled emotions, to be held in the nurturing embrace of God. And as we do this, we're allowing our emotions to become reintegrated into the whole of us, rather than giving into the old pattern of scorning and rejecting them. We're also learning the felt sense of the holding presence of God as we do this. And that starts to become a reality that grounds our lives. But when our emotions start to feel overwhelming, it's important to return to something that grounds us, like our breath, or going for a walk in nature, something that is a stable anchor for us, a safe place, before proceeding again and moving into the felt sensations of the emotion. Don't let yourself become too overwhelmed, but keep returning to finding your center of gravity as you work through difficult emotions. Because so much is locked in there, and as we start to open it out, it can become quite a cathartic process. And so one has to do this with a sense of real gentleness with ourselves and taking ourselves, guiding ourselves slowly through this process. But each time we dare to stay present in the midst of our difficult emotions, some of the tyrannical power that they've had over us is diminished. And we're also learning that we have an immense capacity for inner courage and stability. This allows us to live in a less victimized kind of way and to bring this courage more and more into our daily lives. One of the practices that is encouraged by the contemplative outreach movement is the welcoming prayer or welcome practice. And I'll lead us in doing this as an exercise now before continuing with the talk. So find somewhere to sit, or as you're sitting where you are, allow yourself to become comfortable and relaxed. Settle into your body, gently focus on your breathing for a while, and allow yourself to become still. And then become aware of whatever is happening in your emotions and sink into the felt sensation of these in your body. And now, as I pray through the words of this prayer, allow yourself to echo this in your mind, your body, and your heart. Welcome, welcome, welcome. I welcome everything that comes to me in this moment, because I know it is for my healing. I welcome all thoughts, feelings, emotions, persons, situations, and conditions. I let go of my desire for security. I let go of my desire for approval. I let go of my desire for control. I let go of my desire to change any situation, condition, person, or myself. I open to the love and presence of God and the healing action and grace within. Amen. You could pause the video here at this point to spend some time noticing how you feel after that prayer. You might want to write down some of your reflections in a journal. The intention expressed in this welcoming prayer is beautifully described by the poet Rainer Maria Rilke, who wrote, "How could we forget those ancient myths that stand at the beginning of all cultures? The myths about dragons that at the last moment are transformed into princesses. Perhaps all the dragons in our lives are princesses who are only waiting to see us act just once with beauty and courage. Perhaps everything that frightens us is in its deepest essence something helpless that wants our love. So you mustn't be frightened if a sadness rises before you larger than any you have ever seen, if an anxiety like light and cloud shadows moves over your hands and over everything that you do. You must realize that something is happening to you, that life has not forgotten you. It holds you in its hands and will not let you fall. Why do you want to shut out of your life any uneasiness, any misery, or any depression? After all, you don't know what work these conditions are doing inside you. There's an amazing resonance with the words of the welcoming prayer. I welcome everything that comes to me in this moment because I know it is for my healing. That's deep trust. So the spiritual journey is not teaching us to escape or rise above our difficult emotions, but rather to learn to recognize and welcome them, allowing them to have space within us, to heal us in ways that our minds don't immediately understand. And in the process of finding room in ourselves for the dragons that we've feared or resisted, we find that eventually they lose their power to terrify us and control our lives. They find their place within us, maybe even turning into princesses. Matt Licata, who's an amazing spiritual teacher, and especially on working with difficult emotions, a psychotherapist who does a lot of work with people in this area, and he wrote, healing is not a destination. It is your willingness to love all of yourself, to take all of life, the joy and the sorrow of it, into your vast heart. As we open our hearts to the parts of us that we've rejected and abandoned, we are opening to the vastness and tenderness of God's heart, or the universal heart, that is spacious enough to hold all of us, even the parts that we would rather turn from in shame and fear. And as our hearts start to open into this expansiveness, we discover an ability to extend the same compassion to others, because our hearts are discovering what James Finlay calls the boundaryless, deathless nature of love. Now, I want to end with talking briefly about our experiences with our most difficult emotions, those dark nights where we find ourselves in unbearable anguish, those times when it feels as if the ground has fallen out from beneath us, when nothing makes sense, and we feel desperately alone and lost. You're not alone when you have this experience. We all have these experiences at times. And our tendency when we find ourselves in these times of deep emotional turmoil is to become trapped inside of the emotion, completely believing in that moment that this is who we are. And so we feel isolated and abandoned, cut off from others and God, because our world has shrunk into this emotion that we're feeling, and the self that's feeling it, the small, sometimes feels like a tiny, frightened, lost child that we become in the midst of that terrifying emotion. And many years ago, when I was in my 20s, I was going through a very dark and painful time, and I tried reaching out to the God I thought I knew, crying out to be rescued from the emotional storm I was in. And all I found when I reached out there was nothing, darkness, an empty silence. I felt desperately alone and abandoned by God. Partly that was an invitation to move into a more expansive sense of God than the small image I was reaching out to. But for me at the time, it was a literal dark night of the soul. And for many of us, this is our experience when we are in the depths of emotional turmoil. And the truth of the matter is that we are cut off from God in those moments. Not because God has abandoned us. That is never, ever possible. But because our whole world and sense of self has become imprisoned inside of the difficult emotion and the narratives that go around with that. And we believe that the horror of this painful landscape is the truth of who we are. We believe that God has abandoned us. James Finlay describes that all of us carry a burden that is at times more than we can bear. And in the midst of this unbearable anguish, nothing makes sense. And God does feel like a cruel, distant dream. When reflecting on this, I'm often reminded of Jesus' words on the cross, my God, why have you forsaken me? And this shows us the utter humanity of Jesus, that he too had this felt experience of being abandoned by God in the midst of his horrific anguish. And yet this was followed by his final prayer of surrender, into your hands I commit my spirit. It's an incredible picture of a deep, abiding hope in the midst of profound suffering and hopelessness, that somehow our anguish and sense of abandonment in those moments that where we feel overwhelmed and trampled by our burden that is at times more than we can bear, even our failure to know and recognize God's presence in these moments, all of this is held in God, is never separated from God. And as Jesus' final words on the cross show us, these times of profound suffering can be a doorway to a deeper awareness of God as we commit our broken and lost spirit into God's hands. It's a beautiful extract from a Rilke poem that has become my own prayer in times of deep anguish. How I long to be held in the great hands of your heart. Oh, let them take me now. Into your hands I place these fragments, my life. And you, God, spend them however you want. You, God, spend them however you want. So let me end with reading a quote from Ruth Burroughs, who wrote, "Surrender and abandonment are like a deep, inviting, frightening ocean into which we are drawn. We make excursions into it to test it, to see whether it's safe, to enjoy the sensation of it. But for all kinds of reasons, we always go back to dry land, to solid ground, to where we're safe. But the ocean beckons us out anew, and we risk, again, being afloat in something bigger than ourselves. And we keep doing that, wading in and then going back to safety, until one day, when we are ready, we just let the waters carry us away."